Welcome back to the Home of Explanations. You've got more than money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. I've often wondered, for the folks who actually listen for the entire 2 hours, how often they go, yeah, we know. Hey, you've got more than money. Yeah, we know. But it's radio, dude. You know, people tune in. I don't know. You know what? Someday I'll look that up. I know that there's, I'm sure there's statistics that say how what's the average length of time people listen on a Saturday. John just said, I'm sorry, what did you say? So I think we've determined for John the average length of time is 8 seconds. and God bless us. It's called, by the way, behind the scenes, it's called resetting the show. That's what they call that in the industry, resetting the show. We are resetting the show, saying more than money. Welcome to, if you're in the second, just joining us for the second full hour. First hour will be set on podcast Monday around noon on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com. Make sure you check that out. Good callers. We had great questions. Great questions. Ooh, what a wascoey wabbit. He asked great questions. We had great questions and some really good emails. You might want to check that out. And, of course, if you'd like to join us this morning, 610-720-7900 or gene@askmtm.com. Dick asks a very simple question. Why not lower the capital gains rate and apply it to all gains? I'm with you. I got no problem with that. It was a follow-up to, can you give me any insight as to why we have long-term capital gains rate, short-term capital gains? What difference should it make to the government how long it takes to accomplish the gain? First of all, I will never, ever, ever put myself in the position of trying to either understand or defend politicians. Oh, no. Why is the, you know, up to a year is magic. You got to pay full tax. After a year, you get capital gains rates. The original theory many, many, many years ago when politicians were actually public servants was to encourage long-term capital investment, meaning encourage real Americans, average Americans, to be part of the kind of the buy and hold strategy, the I'm putting money into a company for years and years and years so that companies could rely upon that capital. Companies could project and build business models based on the stability of that capital. And it encouraged people to leave the money there because they got a better tax rate when they eventually sold it, as opposed to kind of whipsawing in and out of a stock. So the theory was, I think, pretty rational. Now, for some of you who are Hillary Clinton fans, sorry. I'm just trying to picture any Hillary Clinton fan actually listening to my show for more than about 7 minutes and not wanting to just like rip the radio out of the car and throw it out onto the highway. Did you hear what he said? Yeah. And you know what? If you're a Hillary Clinton fan or a Barack Obama fan or a politician's fan, because I've got more than enough venom for all of them. If you're a big fan of those guys and you haven't ripped your radio out by now, just understand that I'm a kinder, gentler man now than I was years ago. And I only actually say about a third of what I'm thinking. So anyway, where was I? Okay, back to the tax rates. Hillary Clinton has already proposed tax increases. Now, what a lovely, brilliant way to try to win a presidential election. You know what? I'm telling you right now, I'm going to raise your taxes. I'm going to pound you. And her claim is it's okay because it's only capital gains rates and it's only on the wealthy. There you go. That should make everybody feel more comfortable. The word slippery slope seems to apply to everything that comes out of a politician's mouth. Except, I'll be honest, Donald Trump. Oh, my gosh. You know, all these guys, you know, Ted Cruz and Rubio and, oh, yeah, we're rebels. We're rebels. Yeah, we're independent. We have independent thinking. And you know what? We're independent thinking right up to the point where we don't like what you just said. And you know what? Now you hurt my friend John McCain's feelings. Now you're crazies, and now you're just jackasses. Because we're in this club called the Senate. And, you know, we're willing to fight, but we're going to fight in two ways that everybody else would go, what? Number one, we're going to say, I disagree with my distinguished are you kidding me? They're the enemy. They're trying to destroy America. Where I come from, that's called the enemy. Don't be telling me you're, like, going out for a beer with the guy. Don't be telling me that. Now, that's just the way I think. I could be wrong. I'm not, but I could be. And then secondly, I'm not telling you the truth anyway. I'm lying to you because I'm a politician. Why do politicians lie? When you run over a skunk, why does it stink? It's a skunk. Why does Bambi look so darn cute? It's a deer. Bambi's adorable. I got two sets of fawns, two sets of twin fawns on my property. Oh my God, they can't be any cuter. You want to just go over and take a bite out of them. They're so sweet. They're just adorable. They got eyes the size of saucers. That's what deer are. Politicians lie. And then you got Donald Trump. Now, does he say stuff kind of off the cuff? Sure. Does that offend the teleprompter crowd? Oh, yeah. You know, if he had written that out better, he would, oh, my God. Says stuff off the top of his head. So, okay. And does some of it come out not exactly right? Yeah. But is he lying to you? No.
More than money.
I don't think so. Can he win? I don't know. Is it refreshing? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com. Very, very kind of Gary to send an email. The interview that you did a couple weeks ago with Marcus Lemonis was fantastic. Any update on the Emmaus business? The only update I have is what I saw on the show itself, which aired after my interview. They apparently reached a very reasonable accommodation and are doing some really, really good work. I got to confess, after the interview with Marcus Lemonis from The Prophet, and knowing that he was highlighting a company in Emmaus, the first hour of the show, I was really nervous because it looked really shaky. Precise Graphics is the name of the company, and the first half hour you're going, man, he is really beating these guys up. Two brothers, they seem really nice guys, and they've been around a while. But I mean, and I get it. And they're talking about companies that they serve, and it's very cool when you see a national show, and they're talking about the Lehigh Valley and the quality of the people. And you heard Marcus during our interview talk about how he loves the Lehigh Valley because the people are. This is America. This is hardworking. This is, you know, he stays in wonderful places where he gets great service and he deals with great people. And he talks about Bethlehem and how much he enjoyed staying here. And just really, really cool stuff. Is there a shot, chance that we might get him back on? The answer is sure. We'll work on that. 610-720-7900. We go to the phones. We talk to David. David, good morning.
Hey, morning. It's Gene, right?
It is indeed.
Yeah, morning. You know, I wanted to ask you, after the 2008 stock market crash, some economists, forensic economists, criminal economists, were studying what's called the LIBOR and discovered that the interest rates of not only all Americans, but basically all of the world, were being frauded. And the LIBOR is the London Interbank Offered Rate. And I'm wondering, first of all, are you aware of this? And then, you know, apparently some of the biggest banks in not only the country but the world have been prosecuted for this. They're being allowed to take settlements but not admit to criminal behavior. So UBS, that's one of the biggest Swiss banks in the world, I think Bloomberg was actually calling for yanking their corporate charter. You know, their right to do business in America was going to be, Bloomberg was recommending that they be, you know, lose their business license. Chase Manhattan, Wells Fargo, I think Bank of America, Barclays, almost all of them have paid out at minimum $250 million in settlements. But the total value of the LIBOR scandal is said to be in excess of $500 trillion.
David, it's an important issue. It's an interesting issue. So I appreciate the call, and I'll make a couple comments on it. I appreciate that very much. The whole issue really becomes one of interest rate charges, interest rate liabilities. When you borrow money, you're borrowing it, and different loans are structured very differently. So if you're talking about a mortgage, it's generally a fixed rate, very straightforward. And in general, very few people who have borrowed money on a home mortgage find themselves confused or feeling put upon. However, when you're in the corporate environment and you're borrowing hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, and your interest rate is tied to the LIBOR, which is an index, don't let the word LIBOR throw you a curveball, it's simply an index, and your interest rate will rise or fall with this rise and fall of the index, the differences, small differences, create huge differences in numbers of dollars. If you're borrowing $100 million and there's a change of 0.5%, we're talking about $500,000 difference. And the allegations that that LIBOR has been manipulated in some way to the detriment of clients. In some cases, the banks have agreed to settlements. The fact that they haven't admitted wrongdoing is fairly common in these kinds of arbitration proceedings. Hey, we'll agree to reimburse folks. We're not admitting that we did anything wrong. It's fairly common in many legal proceedings to try to limit future liabilities at any rate. $500 trillion, I have no clue how to even get my head around that number. The Chinese stock market dropped by a third, and they dropped $3 trillion. Simple math tells me that then the Chinese stock market was worth something in the order of $9 trillion. China is one of the largest countries on the face of the planet. Is this problem likely a $500 trillion problem? The answer is no. Just simple math. But is it a problem? Sure. Our company is making restitution, it appears. Does that create a healthier environment now that it's kind of the lights being shined on this? I think so. More problems yet to be revealed? Almost certainly. Welcome to the 21st century. I'm surprised WikiLeaks is not already involved. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com. Jay writes, I don't like the stock market, and I'm making nothing at the bank. Okay, what an uplifting way to start your email. Thank you so much. I'm thinking I could do much better investing in coins or stamps or baseball cards. Jay, kindly, he just says, what do you think? I think you got to rethink this. I think you got to rethink. Now, to be honest, to be fair to Jay, again, it depends. It depends. If he's talking about he's got $1,000 and he doesn't want to put it in the stock market and he's making nothing in the bank and he's out of here and he's going to buy some baseball cards and it's not going to affect his ability to pay his bills and it's not going to affect his retirement, it's not going to affect, you know, his wife punching him in the head, knock yourself out. Do it. Or stamps or coins or whatever you want to do. But if your theory is, I'm sitting on 500 grand and the stock market looks shaky and I'm making nothing in the bank, I'm going to buy $500,000 worth of baseball cards. You know, you got to take your medication the way the doctor prescribes it. You can't take it some days and not others. Come on. No, this is a really bad idea, in my opinion. In my opinion. By the way, if you're married, I would wear Kevlar everywhere I would go because I think she's going to shoot you. Coins, stamps, baseball cards, these are called collectibles. And are they, for many people, a source of tremendous pleasure? Absolutely. Have some folks, and the probability, right, by the way, follows roughly along the same lines as winning the lottery. Have some folks found stamps that ended up being worth $100,000? They found a coin that's worth $1 million. Of course. Of course. Of course. Again, probabilities, I don't know, 9 million to 1. I don't know, but really bad probabilities. Yeah. So is there a value in creating an investment strategy that's based on the probabilities of success measured in millions of something millions to 1 against you? I don't see it. I really don't. I really don't. Being a dealer, maybe you want to buy a coin shop and become an expert, or you are an expert and you can buy and sell and become a dealer. Well, now you're a business person. That's not a coin investment. That's investing in a business. Dealing in stamps, now that's a stamp business. That's not stamps. You get the point. So could you do well being a dealer in collectibles? Sure. Sure. Do you make tons of money in antiques? Some people have, but it's pretty rare. Can you make tons of money dealing in antiques, having an antiques business? Sure. Sure. But, Jay, God bless you. Don't do this. That's not a good idea. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com. You know what? Let's go back to the phones and let's talk to Will. Will, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gene, and that was nice to hear about your family being on a mission trip. I enjoyed myself this past year.
Isn't it? It's remarkable, isn't it? That you go theoretically to help somebody else, and you come back a far more help to yourself.
You've absolutely said it right on the nose.
God bless us. God bless us. How may we help you, sir?
Well, thank you. 2 decades ago, a family, my mother, had inherited a house from her mother. Five portions, basically 20%. And I was the only homeless person at the time, basically still living with my parents. And so I bought that home, but my mom, I didn't know that there would be future ramifications to worry about, but she listed that, she put it in the courthouses that I only paid a dollar for. And really, towards all the other family members, I paid over $17,000.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, now that I'm getting very close to selling it, I'm actually meeting a real estate agent to put it on the market. I'm thinking it's going to sell for about $30,000,
$35,000.
Mm-hmm. I really don't know what's going to happen with capital gains tax. And I'm thinking I'm going to get hammered for the whole amount because I listed it, or the mother listed it, for $1, the purchase price, 20 years ago.
Let me ask you a question, Will. When you bought out the interests of the other folks, did you write a check?
I don't think I have any copies at all, and my father was kind enough, he allowed me to do installments. I had remembered paying like the sister and the brother and maybe one whole lump sum.
Okay.
I'm confused.
Well,
I doubt I have those actual records. We're talking 2 decades.
I absolutely understand that. And you know what? The IRS, for all the bad rap that it gets and in many cases rightfully has earned, in many cases they are far more reasonable than many people fear. And if you have a reasonable description, a reasonable basis for your reporting of the gain or loss or whatever the end result should be, and you can have a reasonable description. Maybe it's a statement from a sister that says, yes, he paid me $5,000 for my share. Maybe it's a statement from maybe it's canceled checks. Maybe you can go back to a bank. Maybe you get bits and pieces of it, but at the very least, what you're doing is describing what really happened. You're not creating a fiction. You're not. It's not a figment of somebody's imagination. Is it possible to buy a house for a dollar? Sure. Is that likely the case? Even the IRS would say no. Did your brothers and sisters just go, hey, here's a buck? You know, I'll take 20 cents for my 20%. No, that's not likely. So creating and reporting the scenario as it actually happened, I think, is your first step. Keeping in mind that when you report this transaction, you are not required to include with your tax return copies of checks or documentation. You are simply required to be able to substantiate what you're saying. And in some cases, that's a paper document. That's always the best. In other cases, it's here's what actually happened. And if it's a reasonable description, number one, if it's the accurate and true description, you may never even get a question from the IRS. If you're saying, I sold it for 35, I bought it 20 years ago for 17, I've got an $18,000 gain, and I'm paying you, pick a number, you know, $3,000 in taxes, that may end it right there. But even if you did get the letter from the IRS saying, hey, we're looking at this, we're not really sure, you go in and tell them exactly what the story is. The worst thing that would happen is they would say, you know what, we disagree, we're going to have to disallow that, and you owe a little more money in tax. Best case scenario, it never happens. And if it does happen, you have that conversation, you explain it just as you have to me. Reasonably, low-key, absolute facts. We're not trying to embellish anything. And well,
Thank you. I'd have to ask just a related question to that, because I asked my mother to just put it in writing. What I also have to be truthful for, does this put her in any jeopardy? She's the one that avoided taxes in the first place by saying, you know, she only sold it for a dollar.
No, she didn't avoid any taxes. Was she living in the home at that point?
No, it was my grandmother who deceased.
So she inherited the property? Or she inherited...
No, it was in the will, as it should go equally to each of the...
Very good. And parents. And then it all transferred over to you.
Correct. Yeah, I paid them off for them.
Exactly. What she did is simply expedite the transfer. She did not avoid taxes. There were no taxes due on that transaction.
Okay.
So it does not put your mom in or any of your siblings in any kind of harm's way.
Okay. And then the last follow-up question is, like, it was renting for a while, so just even last year I put in a $3,000 furnace.
Sure.
However, I already deducted that from last year's taxes as well, you know, to offset the rental income.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else like that I should be looking at in order to help out, you know, the ultimate deduction?
Yeah, normally capital improvements like a furnace, like a new roof, like a new sidewalks, all of that would reduce the capital gain. So if you're getting 35, you paid 17, your capital gain is on a gross gain is 18. And we add up all the improvements we put in over the years, and that's 5,000. Your gain has been reduced to 13. But in any case where you have already deducted those improvements, like the furnace you just described, you do not get to deduct it a second time.
I thought not. Okay, that's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate your call very, very much. I think you do you do it straightforward and honest, and according to the facts, I think you're going to be just fine.
Let me say God bless to you and your family.
God bless you both. Thank you. Thank you so much. 610-720-7900. We're going to a half-hour break. This show is flying today. It has been very, very quick. Will's question, very interesting, applies to so many people. It's an interesting transaction. You feel like I'm the only one that's ever kind of gotten into this kind of... No. Lots and lots and lots of folks have been in exactly that situation. We have a couple in Phillipsburg that wants to help their 15-year-old granddaughter, and I think you're going to be really, really interested in the way that we're going to end up working this out. It's going to be pretty cool. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com. Thank you for all your emails. Several just going, we love the show. You talk about making a guy feel like $1 million. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. Stick with us. We'll return right after this on More Than Money. I don't know how you keep on giving. Welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got More Than Money Radio. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor, live this Saturday morning, taking your calls at 610-720-7900, taking your emails at gene@askmtm.com. Very interesting. I'll get to that. But we always go to the phones first. Let's go to the phones. We talk to Robert. Robert, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gene.
How may we serve you?
I am going to be receiving a small inheritance, and my question to you is, I'm not working.
Okay, right? Yep.
So my wife is paying the bills, and I think we're going to be getting around $200,000 in cash and about $58,000 in stock.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if I should pay off my mortgage.
How much is your mortgage balance?
$25,000.
And the interest rate?
4.65%.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
More than money.
On the surface, now, without knowing all the details of your financial picture, I think that's a good idea. It eliminates a monthly payment. 4.65 is not a particularly low interest rate. In essence, by paying that off, you're gaining a guaranteed benefit off of that $25,000, and you're using a portion of this inheritance. You're not using all of this inheritance.
Correct.
So, I think on the surface, at the very least, it seems to make sense. In addition to your mortgage, do you have any other major debts?
The only other debt, we have no credit card debt. The only other debt we have is $14,000 in student loans for my son, which I want to pay that off, too.
Is your son still in school, or has he graduated?
No, he kind of left.
kind of left school?
Yeah.
Okay. Is he making monthly payments on the student loans?
No, we are. That's another debt that we have, so we're actually making the payments for him right now.
Philosophically, I might tend to disagree with you on how you're approaching that, but that's a parent's choice. That's not a financial decision. And again, if you're making payments on that, do you know what the interest rate is on that?
I know it's over 4%. It's got to be around 5%. I can't remember what the interest rate
is. Yeah, 6 sticks in my mind. But let's say you're right at 5. Then we're in the same ballpark of saying, are you better off trying to go make 5 or 6% return on an investment, or are you better off paying off a debt and being guaranteed that you're going to make a decent rate of return? And I think paying off the debts makes a great deal of sense.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
In addition to this money, forget this money for a second. Let's assume this had not yet happened. Do you folks have a safety net? Do you have a savings account in the bank at this point?
Yes, we do.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Because I know it's hard not working. I know it's hard that, and your wife has certain, pressures, of course, because she's paying the bills. And this inheritance can give both of you a tremendous amount of breathing room. A little bit of peace of mind. Getting rid of the debts, I think, is a huge step in the right direction. Now, lots of financial advisors disagree. They think you should keep it. They think you need the tax deduction. I think that's a big steaming pile of hoo-ha. I think just get those debts gone. Get those payments gone. Keep a fair big chunk of this money in the bank until everything is exactly the way you want it to be. And create as much peace of mind as you can.
Excellent.
I appreciate the call very much, sir.
Thank you, Gene. Bless you.
And bless you. 610-720-7900. We'll go back to the phones. We talked to Bob. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very well.
The question I have is in reference to Chase Manhattan Bank.
Yeah.
They were caught three times getting in trouble. Last thing was stock manipulation, where they gave their profits was actually when they had the losses. And also, I understand Citibank actually was fined, what, $3 billion, I think, in reference to that? An issue like that, is that correct, sir?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't know the details of any of the settlements that either Chase or Citibank or Bank of America have had. I know that they've had struggles. I know that they've had challenges. I know there's allegations. I don't tend to track those because I don't tend either through my client accounts or personally to invest in those kinds of individual financial stocks. I don't tend to invest in individual stocks directly at all. So I apologize. My opinion here is of virtually no value to you.
No, I understand your point, because I understand prior what they had done. They were going into people's credit cards. They're checking their, you know, if they had bad credit without them knowing it. As a result, then they would raise the rate in reference to the Visa and the other cards.
Yep.
And they got caught on that also. That's
again,
what my point was.
Bob,
you know,
I apologize. I can't give you a thumbs up, down, support or not, because I just don't know. But I appreciate the phone call very much indeed. There's lots of stuff going on. Lots of stuff going on out there that, tell you the truth, I scratch my head about. Don't really know. And to be fair, there are lots of folks who have an absolute need to know those kinds of things because they're managing portfolios with individual stocks, whether they're a mutual fund manager or hedge fund manager, or whether that's just their investment style. Not something that we do, choose to do. Is there plenty of stuff going on out there that you would scratch your head about? Oh, yeah. It's almost to the point now where I get enough material across my desk about financial advisors that do things that you go, what? You're kidding. That I don't even bring a third of it to the show. Not even a third of it. I read one last night in Forbes magazine about some guy that created a company called Secured Lending. And I do remember seeing invitations. That's not the right word. Solicitations is a better word. Some years ago to participate in a program called Secured Lending. And the whole idea was that you put in your money with lots of other folks, and these guys would make bridge loans on real estate deals. So a developer buys a piece of property. He's got 500 acres he's going to develop, and getting between the purchase and the actual sale of the property, there's lots of costs, engineering costs and infrastructure costs and on and on and on. Well, the bridge loans would pay for that. And then they would get paid off with interest when the property is sold, except that they raised $60 million and they lost every penny. Every penny. You have got to work really hard. I mean, I get that it's hard to make a profit. I get that. I mean, let's say you want to double your money, give you $60 million, we want $120 million back. That's hard. That's a hard thing to do. Not many people can do that. And I'm not sure many people should even try to do that. But I'll tell you what, if you've got a sound business model and you've got honorable people, ooh, that's kind of a problem. Because the guy, and it's in the current Forbes magazine, if you want to look it up. Three of the guys he was aligned with were former felons, two of which did hard time for securities fraud and then he goes, I didn't really know that. They seemed like nice people. What? Oh my gosh. A lot of folks go, Gene, you know, the whole more than money thing, and you seem like a nice guy, and I understand you got a cornfield in your backyard, and I do. At the office, we have a cornfield in our backyard. We have half a dozen deer that live in the stand of woods that are not too far away because there's a couple county parks or township parks. And I have a red fox that lives just in the thicket on our property. It's just, yeah, we're in the country. and my house has 20 acres of trees. I'm a deer, tree hugger. I wish I could be a deer hugger. I would love to hug one of those little fawns. They are so cute, but they tend to run away. I get that. See, well, you don't have enough leather and chrome for me. Okay. I'll bet that guy that took all that $60 million and flushed that down the crapper, I bet his office had a lot of leather. I'll bet he had big, shiny chrome letters over the door. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. One of our loyal listeners was kind enough to send us another invitation, and wow, this guy is very impressed with himself. Oh, my goodness. Oh, he is. It just goes on and on and on. And the invitation, of course, hits on the absolute hot button. And the hot button is financial certainty in an uncertain economic environment. Yeah. Everybody's interested in gaining as much financial certainty as they possibly can within reason. If it fits, it depends, yada, yada, yada. Now, of course, it's a fancy dinner, of course. And seating is limited, of course, yada, yada, yada. Upside-only investments, guaranteed lifetime income, yada, yada, yada. I am not going to give you a free dinner. I'm not. I'm sorry. I will give you a little tiny bottle of water. You know what, though? If you stop by my office, it's way better than that, because we give out big bottles. And if you want iced tea, we'll do iced tea. And if you want coffee or tea, hot tea, we'll do that too. And we even have those little pods that'll do like chai tea latte. Exactly. It's like crazy. But you come to one of our events, yeah, you get water. Again, we got a cornfield in our backyard. We're not fancy. We're not fancy. Now, a couple things that I will note about this invitation. Many of you have gotten it. It's in the Lehigh Valley, I'm sure. I've given you enough tips so you can identify it. I'm not identifying the individual involved. I'm sure a very nice person. Actually, I don't know that. How would I know that? I don't know this guy. He will be discussing fixed indexed annuities. Excuse me. So make your choice. If you are so inclined to get the free meal, knock yourself out. Go eat. These are nice places, so go eat. If you're saying, now, wait a second, it doesn't say anything on the invitation about fixed index annuities. I know, but I already know. That's how it works. And a lot of his PR and a lot of his invitations are paid for by the annuity companies. And so I can't guarantee. I'm not allowed to use the word guarantee. There's a high probability that when you sit, you're going to hear fixed indexed annuities. Now, you may not hear that term right away, but it's fixed indexed annuities. It's just that simple. The other thing that I will note is that there is nothing on the invitation that discloses a investment advisory company or a broker-dealer, a licensed investment advisor. It doesn't indicate that. So, and again, I don't know for a fact. Do not know. You can check it out. You can go online to FINRA, BrokerCheck. Very useful website. Oh my goodness, you learn tons and tons and tons. And search this guy out, and he may not be licensed. I guarantee you he has an insurance license. I can't guarantee you that. I'm assuming, because he is selling fixed indexed annuities, he's selling it through an insurance license. The requirements for insurance salesmen far less stringent than to become a registered investment advisor. Is he a fiduciary? If he is not licensed, the answer is no. He's a salesman. And if fixed indexed annuities is your thing, or if you're going, I just want to learn more about fixed indexed annuities, cool, get a free meal, go do it. But then follow up, be very, very cautious Because if fixed indexed annuities is the tool or the product that he wishes to sell you, then you got to pray that fits you, because that's what you're going to get. And as my dad was fond of saying many, many years ago, if the only tool you own is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Hey, let's go frame out a house. I got a hammer. Hey, let's go paint a shed. I got a hammer. This is not good. I would be far more comfortable if the reality of your financial advisory relationship was, we don't care. If the right answer is fixed indexed annuity, fantastic. We'll do that. If the right answer is exchange traded funds, fantastic. If the right answer is institutional hedge funds, fantastic. If the right answer is keep your money in the bank, fantastic. If it's the right answer for you. As opposed to, if you leave here without buying what I want to sell you, I make nothing. And that ain't good for me. Be cautious. Be careful. Very, very interesting. Email. My husband and I are both 61 and planning our retirement. We have 2 children, 3 grandchildren. We don't want to run out of money to live on, but we do want to leave a legacy for our family. Can you help us with options to consider? Very interesting. The answer is sure, I can help. And I'll give you a few of these over the next couple minutes. Number two, just as an observation, you are very typical of the clients that we encounter. Planning your retirement means that you're thoughtful. You're 61, which means you've got some gray hair, or if you're like me, a little less hair, maybe. You know, come on. There aren't a lot of my competitors in the softball playoffs that. No, I got everybody by 20 years. Anyway, bottom line is you're thoughtful and you love your family and you want to leave them a legacy, and yet you want to be wise and practical. You don't want to run out of money. So, yeah, I have a couple options for you. Number one, the best legacy you can leave your children and grandchildren is to remain financially independent your entire life. It is a very, very misguided notion that at age 61, you should in some way, shape, or form relieve yourself of chunks of money with the idea that you're assisting or leaving a legacy now. And I've heard the phrase, well, I might as well do it now while I can see them enjoy it. Okay. If you're 61 and you give it to them now, you will have the pleasure of seeing them enjoy it, spend it, it will be gone. And in 30 years, which sounds like a long time and it's not, you will be 91. And if you have run out of money, you will then be returning to the very people that you gave the money to 30 years ago, who are now in their 60s and retired or soon to retire, and say, hey, we're really struggling. Can you give us a bunch of money? And you will hate every minute of that. The whole thing of putting your hat in your hand and going over to the kid's house and going, we're out of money. And that's so the first legacy I want you to give them, the first legacy I want you to give them is stay financially independent your whole life. Now, interestingly enough, that works out beautifully, beautifully, beautifully if you want to leave them a very substantial legacy of money. Because the best way to stay financially independent your entire life is what I call the golden goose and the eggs. The golden goose and the eggs. Golden goose and the egg says this. If you have whatever you have saved, pick a number, $400,000. If you eat the $400,000, that's the principal. That's the goose. That's the golden goose. If you eat part of the goose, eventually the goose will die. I don't know exactly how long yet, because I don't know how much you're eating. Are you eating, you know, like you're taking a little sliver? Or are you ripping off a leg and gobbling it down? I don't know. But if you eat the eggs, and a $400,000 goose is going to produce $14,000, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 of eggs every year. Keep the goose healthy. Keep the goose healthy. Pay attention. Invest it well. Get good financial advice. Get good tax advice. Review it every 90 days. Stay on top. Monitor. Improve. Polish. Do everything you can to give yourselves the greatest opportunity. No guarantee, but greatest opportunity. If you can live on the eggs, then that means that the goose stays alive and maybe even gets a little fatter, a little healthier. And 30 years from now, instead of saying, hey, kids, could you give me some money? You're saying, hey, kids, I've paid all my bills and I'm still sitting on $400,000 or $500,000. I can basically live forever and never run out of money because I'm only eating the eggs. And since I'm only eating the eggs, that means that when you die, the goose can be left to your family, to your kids and grandkids, maybe great-grandkids. That's a cool way to leave a legacy. Another way to do it, if funds are a little more uncertain or a little less reliable, predictable, substantial, life insurance. Life insurance was designed exactly to do this. Leave a legacy to people that you love or care about that is absolutely certain. And you get to pick the number as long as it fits your cash flow, as long as the premium pattern fits your cash flow. My good friend Dan Agito has taught me in recent years that whole life insurance, that plain vanilla, solid as a rock, tremendous number of guarantees, can't really kind of mess this whole thing up. It's not fancy. You don't need all kinds of sub-account investment. No, you pick a premium that gives you a guaranteed death benefit for your lifetime. And when you croak, your kids get a legacy. It's just that simple. Very, very straightforward. How much time do I have, sir? Oh, very good. Very good. There's a different kind of legacy that I want to make sure that you hear me talk about. And we could absolutely label this the more than money legacy because it's got very little to do with money. It has a great deal to do with the legacy of your life, the legacy of who you are, the legacy of the character of your being, the legacy of the person that you are. Photos and of course most of it's digital now, so God bless us, and videos and letters and journals and notes, the scrapbooks from high school and from grade school, and those ridiculous refrigerator photos or pictures that you drew when you were seven that your mother's heart just melted. And family histories, if you've got either you're into genealogy or you've got a friend that understands that stuff, family histories can be amazing. The stories, especially if you got some seniors, real seniors, 80s, 90s in your family that you can maybe interview, maybe get on videotape and get the old stories. Your libraries, the books that have had a real impact on your life. When my mother passed, her Bibles. Because as many of her generation did, her Bible was almost a diary. Excuse me. It was almost a diary. It was filled with funeral cards of family and friends that she had attended and tucked in her Bible, filled with notes from grandchildren that she just treasured. And just that was her repository of her life and her spirit and her faith. Whether it's your Bibles or your books that have made real impressions on you, that's a legacy you don't need money for. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you for your love of your family. God bless you for your willingness to plan and to be financially independent. God bless you for your instinct that you want to leave the world a little better place than when you found it. But we thank you for that because you're part of a community. You're part of Lehigh Valley. You're part of an America that brings real value and honor. God bless you. We just have 90 seconds or so before the top of the hour. If you heard anything that you would like more information about, if you would like the opportunity to sit with a financial advisor in the MTM World Headquarters in the Holy Lands between Bethlehem and Nazareth, we welcome that opportunity to offer that opportunity to you. You can request it with an email, gene@askmtm.com. You can log on to our website, morethanmoneyonline.com, morethan, THAN, moneyonline.com, and request more information or request an opportunity to sit down and meet with one of us. Or you can do it easily with the phone, 610-746-7007. 610-746-7007. A couple hours, my sweetheart will be home. I hope your sweethearts are all around you for the whole wonderful weekend. We'll see you next time on More Than Money. Generous, I don't know how you keep on giving.